I miss a green, for example, I'm already upset. When I find my ball in the bunker, I'm really upset. And when I find my ball in a
fried egg.
The dreaded fried egg.
Fried egg lie, I'm about ready to run off the golf course.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another edition of the Fried Egg Podcast. Tonight, we are hosting Kyle Nathan, friend of the pod and semi-accomplished amateur golfer. We're going to do a new thing. We're going to do mailbag via podcast. We'll just go through kind of your Twitter questions, some email questions, and just give our thoughts on them. Kyle, welcome on.
Thanks. Thanks for having me. Semi-accomplished is generous, but yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Let's answer some questions.
Yeah, it should be fun. We got some really good questions. with it being PGA Championship week, I feel like we should kick off with a question from Chad from Deer Park. How big of a disgrace is the lack of PGA Championship coverage?
It's bad. I think I saw it earlier today. It's on from 1 to 7, which is insanity because I felt like the British Open, I mean, they were forcing you to watch these guys make 8 on the first hole at 4 in the morning, 13 hours of coverage or something, but TNT decides to go with 6 hours of coverage. You miss Spieth, play Thursday, and obviously he's probably one of the top storylines of the week. And I'm not sure what you also get kind of a bad crew. I like Ernie Johnson a lot, but I don't know golf or baseball. Do I really like him in? But yeah, so I'm not a big fan of the coverage.
Yeah, I mean, there's something like how does a network get rights for something and only do one tournament a year?
Like, it is insane. I think also TNT is contractually obligated to air 14 hours of Law and Order a day. So I'm sure that interferes with that.
Yeah. I watch NBA basketball in the playoffs, and when they have the, you know, TNT playoffs, I used to fall asleep to the games all the time, like the late game. And I'd always wake up in the morning and it'd be that show about witches, like Charmed would be on my TV, and I'd be like, who watches this in the morning?
I think I've seen Charmed 8 times for that exact purpose, reason.
It's kind of crazy. It's, you know, in today's modern era, I know you can stream it, but it's like, how do you not have TV coverage? It's like, I think I counted 28 hours of live coverage for the PGA versus 50 hours of live coverage for the Open Championship. Like,
yeah, I mean, that's literally insane. That should never happen.
And they also, like, I mean, everybody's looking at this, like, why is the PGA, like the fourth child nobody cares about? Like, maybe this is one of the issues.
Yeah, for sure it is. It absolutely is. It's hard to compete with the Masters. Obviously, you're not going to compete with the Masters. You're not going to compete with a tournament that goes by the Open Championship. The United States Open is so big. I mean, there's got to be a better way to present your product than showing 6 hours of it on TNT. I mean, that is crazy to me. There's more baseball on MLB Network tonight than 6 hours. You know what I mean? And it's just doesn't make sense.
It's a major championship, and it's like 6 hours of TV coverage is a disgrace, as Chad from Deer Park said.
I agree with Chad.
And it goes to this bigger thing of you know, thinking a date switch is going to solve this problem. Like, they are never going to compete with those four. And the bigger issue is moving the date. Now, all of a sudden, the PGA Championship, instead of competing against MLB baseball in August, is now going to move into May, compete with the NBA, the NHL playoffs. And also, I think there's like the Preakness is on a Saturday, so all of a sudden now you're running up against two of the most popular times of two big sports.
Right. And I think what, you know, one of the main goals of this obviously is to increase interest in the FedEx Cup, right? I mean, that's what everyone's been saying. But I mean, I don't care about the FedEx Cup now. I can't imagine that. I mean, if it starts 2 weeks earlier, 3 weeks, will I really care that much more? I mean, it's still going to overlap a little bit into football season. I think it's a mistake. You're losing so many golf courses that potentially could have severe weather issues, which I'm okay with, I think, but I'm not sure they'll be okay with, because the logistics of everything with, you know, having to extend it to a Monday or, you know, worst case, even a Tuesday due to snow in Rochester or Wisconsin, you know, in May. I mean, that could easily happen.
Hey, reigning Williams Invitational champ.
Hey.
how good is Oak Hill?
Oh, so good. It's definitely in my top three or four. It's just so good. It's so fair. It's hard to imagine a golf course with less gimmicks that is so hard. I mean, it's just straightforward, mint shape. I'm glad they're doing the redo, because they did have those three or four holes that don't really go with the rest of the course. I mean, they're still good, but you're kind of just like, this doesn't really fit in. So going back to the original design, I think will make it that much better.
Yeah, I was talking to a superintendent who moved to a Chicago course from Oak Hill, and he was saying that he's like, that place is going to be guaranteed top 10 in the country after the restoration and getting the Fazio out and the Ross back. So it'll be interesting. You touched on the switch to May and kind of the limited courses and the new courses also. So there's, you know, obviously now instead of having northern courses, there's going to be a lot more southern courses. You live in Florida. So what are some new courses? And AJ, where, we got a lot of questions about this, but what are some of the new courses that you are excited to potentially see now that it's in May and these court, like Texas, Florida, southern states can be more prevalent hosts?
You know, I think that Texas has some really good options. I think Champions, I played in the four ball there earlier this spring, and that's a golf course that you could set up really hard. It's a big golf course, you know, it can host a ton of people, and it has hosted big events in the past. I think that would be an easy first option, would be to go to Champions, and staying in Houston, Carlton Woods.
I was going to ask about those too.
Oh, they're so good. I don't, you know, they're very hard too. You can make the winning score kind of whatever you want, I feel like, especially if the wind gets up out there. Dallas National, I haven't played, but I've seen a lot of mentions of it on Twitter, so I imagine that would be a good spot. And Austin Country Club, where they have the, or it's not Austin Country Club, Austin Golf Club, where they don't have the match play there now. That's a really good golf course.
I think that Trinity Forest, that new one in Dallas that's going to take over for the, was it Dean and DeLuca? It's the one, yeah. not the Colonial, the other one down there that's taken over for like TPC Four Seasons. That's another one I'd like to see. I guess, you know, from
Port Crenshaw, right?
Yeah. The Stream Song Black Course, people are saying, might be an option down in Florida. I wouldn't be very excited about Doral, but that's being floated around.
Oh, I for some reason, I was going to ask you about Stream Song, actually. I cannot picture a major championship being in Florida.
It's hard to... There aren't really many good options, and Stream Song, the tough thing is, like, the infrastructure. Like, it's kind of in the middle of nowhere. Like, where are people going to stay? But, in the middle of nowhere is kind of similar to how Erin Hills was this year, and that worked out okay. But, yeah, it's tricky. I don't know about Stream Song.
MacArthur?
Nah, I don't think it's infrastructure, you know?
Right.
It's like Medalist, MacArthur down in South Florida, I just don't think there's enough space for grandstands. You know, it's like a swamp.
Right. No, I agree. I have a hard time picturing it, to be honest.
But I think it does open up, like, you know, potentially Pinehurst. Pinehurst mm-hmm. would be an interesting one. Shoal Creek in Alabama. I think they hosted a couple PGAs in the 90s where they had record attendance.
So yeah, they definitely have.
So that'd be an interesting one. And Alabama is, like, starved for anything, any time, big-time events.
Country Club of Birmingham would actually be really cool, too. That golf course is awesome. The Ross course, or they might both be Ross, but I think it's the East course there is awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they had the USGA state team, too.
Mm-hmm.
An interesting thing would be if the USGA just says, like, fuck you to the PGA and awards, like, LACC, a couple majors, or a couple U.S. Opens, Riviera won, like, and just plans it out for, like, 30 years and takes over all the West Coast courses. Because then, I mean, there's Chambers Bay, too, but I think they got to fix those greens from what I heard from even the latest Pacific Coast Am. Buzz was the greens were even worse than they were for the U.S. Open.
Yeah, I remember you telling me that. That's surprising given how bad they looked on TV.
Uh-huh. So, and then there's obviously Valhalla, which I don't think it gets anybody excited.
Looks so cool, but yeah, I agree.
So we got a couple President's Cup questions here from Ben McNamara. If the President's Cup list was finalized today and it's 10 USA team rookies, do you have to pick Phil and Patrick Reed to round out the team?
Yes. I mean, you have to. Yeah, I don't think there's much wiggle room there. I think Reed is the American Poulter, right? He's a polarizing figure who, for some reason, plays his best golf during the Ryder Cup. And I mean, you know, Poulter at Medina a few years ago when the legend grew, he wasn't even playing well going in. And then, you know, the European team's getting killed. All of a sudden he makes a couple putts. He's, you know, flailing his fists around and they come back and win. So you need somebody like that, especially on a such a young team where guys might be reluctant to, you know, display their emotions.
Yeah.
And obviously Mickelson, you get the leadership presence and also, you know, one of the best golfers.
Yeah, you also couple, like, so Reed's 11th, so that's kind of a no-brainer. Even he hasn't played well, he's still 11th. And then you look at the list around Mickelson, you got Brian Harman. I wouldn't mind Brian Harman. I think he's a guy that could be a really good match play player. He played...
Yeah, he's a bulldog. Yeah. You would not want to play him in match play.
No. And then you got Duffner... Snedeker, Steele, Woodland, and then Phil. But, like, nobody on that list. Like, I would be excited about Harmon getting a chance, but, like, I don't think you pass up the experience of Phil. As cliche as experiences in team match play, you know, it's still golf.
Yeah, I think that's real. I don't even think Steele's parents would be like, oh my God, I can't believe they picked Phil over you. You know, I just think it's pretty clear. Pretty yeah. clear those would be your two guys.
Uh-huh. I would like to see Harmon play his way on. Maybe he plays well at Quail Hollow and moves up. But
I would, too. I remember seeing, you know, people were wondering who he was going into the last round of the U.S. Open that might not be avid watchers of golf. And I think maybe it was Tron or somebody tweeted out that he beat Ricky Fowler in a match so bad Ricky cried. He's like, he's not afraid of the big moment, and he's not afraid to, you know, step on your throat, which is exactly what you need in those formats.
I had Sean Martin on the pod earlier, who he covered a ton of college and amateur golf at Golf Week before he moved over to the tour, and he was talking about he just did an interview with Harmon, and Harmon talked about how, you know, I was the same age as Harmon growing up, how Harmon. If Twitter existed and the internet and social media, he might have turned pro right out of high school, because I mean he won everything. He was
right.
He was on the Walker Cup at age 17.
Oh yeah, I remember his name as well. He was unbelievable.
Yeah, and I mean it's kind of crazy when you think about the then versus now. The next President's Cup question is from Ben also. How big of a deal should it be if Hao Tong Li becomes the first Chinese player in it?
I mean, I think it would be about as big of a deal as you can get. There's a lot of articles being written recently. You know, golf's on the decline and, you know, struggling. How are they going to reach new fans, new viewers? And this would 1,000% be a great way to do that. You have one of the biggest populations in the world. China, as we've seen with some of the WGC, has good golf courses. So for one of their own to play, it would just be massive.
Yeah,
it'd probably be the highest rated President's Cup we've had ever.
I mean, when you think about it too, is we saw the web.com winner a couple of weeks ago, that Marty Doe is a Chinese native too. It's like it's starting to, you're starting to see a lot of Chinese names pop up even in like the amateur tournaments, and it's becoming kind of, you know, it's a little bit behind Japan and Korea, but it's becoming a golf, kind of another country that can compete in golf. And I think that's really big when you look at, you know, the global sport and the Olympics and the World Cup, getting more countries involved.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's not like it's going to be a gimmick either. The guy almost scooped the Open. You know, he can play.
Yeah. I agree. I think that's a really big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And I what is their population, second to India, or is it the most populous country? I probably should know.
It's got to be in the top three. I mean, that for sure. But
yeah.
I don't know that even.
we are pretty horrible people. It's got to be one or two. Am I forgetting?
Yeah, I would get Russia's probably up there.
Yeah, Russia. That's scary that neither of us know what. We are idiot Americans.
I can tell you their GDP, but I can't tell you the population.
Stefan, what would professional golf be like if golfers weren't independent contractors and instead run like other major leagues? This is a great question.
It is a good question. I've always wondered why, if you made golf a team sport, if you could actually pull it off. And the answer is probably no. But, you know, if you had five or six golfers from each city, it would kind of be funny because you think about it now, golfers are so well treated by fans. You know, if they're playing poorly, it's like, this poor guy, you know, he's struggling with his swing, blah, blah, blah. Whereas if you look at, you know, the Cubs Twitter tonight, they're like, oh, this bullpen fucking sucks, you know, fire him all. Could you imagine if this guy, you know, finished double to lose your golf game for Chicago? I mean, they would just get killed. And, you know, now it's like, oh, you know, poor guy. He's just, you know, he can't putt. It's so sad. It's like the complete opposite.
It's really interesting, too, when you think about, like, each team would have their own stadium course.
That would be awesome.
And, like, you could build your golf team around your home golf course advantage. I mean, and you could even design, I mean, I don't know. It would get pretty wonky if you could design it too. I mean, then it would be crazy. I think the other thing would be like,
it would be cool. I like the idea.
The minor league system where all of a sudden, like the web.com and mini tours, like if you don't get insurance, you don't have like your transportation costs covered by a team. It's basically like, hey, if you don't play well, you don't get paid. But like minor league baseball, you could go into a slump, and it's not like your livelihood's at jeopardy.
Right. I mean, they always talk about guys on the minor leagues, you know, can't, you know, they eat their ramen and, you know, but they're still getting the money to pay the ramen. The guys on the mini tour that don't have sponsorships, I mean, they're sleeping in their car still to this day and age, and you know, there's nothing, no wiggle room for bad golf.
Yeah, it's if you don't play well, you're going to be out of a job or just hemorrhaging money.
Yeah.
Thoughts on the future of Willett from Isaiah?
Anybody that can win the Masters, it's hard to write off and say he is not a good golfer, not a great golfer. But he maybe, you know, maybe he won the Masters and said, you know what, I won a major, forget it, and I'm going to enjoy life, play a little golf here and there. I mean, you don't know what goes on mentally with these guys, but I mean, I could see him being, I mean, I don't think he'll have anywhere near the career of your boy Westwood, who, you know, famously or infamously has never won a major. But I mean, I would think that Westwood's career would blow, even Paul Casey would probably blow Willits out of the water, I think, when it's all said and done. But you never know. I mean, it could be a, you know, it could be a one and done. It could be a wait a few years and play better. You just never know.
Yeah, golf's such a funny game. And I think you look at Willett, he was the top-ranked amateur in the world at one time, and he had this terrible back injury, and he came back from it. And, you know, he's won 5 times in 5 years from 2012 till 2017. So, like, you know, it's there, and he's got a major. I mean, like, when you think about that at just that, like, he's got a major and 4 other wins, it's, you know, it's a decent career. I mean, he's kind of a fluky winner at that if he doesn't win again. I think he's struggling with injuries again is what I understand. I mean, he finished like 40 shots behind Matsuyama last week, which
right.
is kind of frightening.
Injuries, I mean, that's like, you know, the parallel would be like Trevor Immelman. You know, he won the Masters and then kind of went away, but that was mainly almost, you know, primarily due to injuries. But, you know, not that many people can win the Masters. I mean, all these guys are great, but I mean, how many people could actually go out there on Sunday and win the Masters? At 30, 40? Mm-hmm. So he's got that inside of him. I wouldn't write him off, but the returns this year have not been promising.
No, I saw he changed his coach this week too. So.
Oh boy, that's never good.
No, not good. It's Will. I'm not right. I might be buying Will at stock at this point.
I think I'd probably buy some. I'd take a dabble.
Yeah, he's a penny stock right now.
Yeah, he is.
Actually, he's kind of like Twitter.
Yeah,
maybe.
I don't want to talk about my Twitter investment.
Which recent college grad? Or this is from Andrew Gentile. Which recent college grad that has had success, and he means got his card, is the most surprising given his track record, and like who's way exceeded expectations?
You know, in terms of recent guys, I don't know how recent he's asking. Sorry, Andrew, but you know, Keegan Bradley would be one name that pops to mind immediately when I hear that question. You know, Zach Johnson. I mean, the guy has 2 majors. That's insane. And, you know, played golf in Iowa at Drake. Keegan Bradley, same thing, major champion. So there's a lot. I don't know. More recent, you'd probably be able to speak to it better than me.
I think, like, Smiley Kaufman would be one where, you know, he didn't start on his college team. Like, he didn't make the top 5 of his college team until second semester of senior year. And then all of a sudden he got on this, like, torrid run and rolled it right into web.com status. And then he won the event on the web and got his card. And then he wins in his first 3 starts. And it's like, you know, if you look 4 years back, he wasn't even starting on his college team. So that
was he in the final group on Sunday?
Oh yeah, final
group. Was that Saturday? That was Sunday?
That was Sunday, yeah.
Wow.
Because Bernhard Langer was in the group in front of him.
Bernhard almost won that. That's amazing.
That was the year Willett won. I mean, that
he'll probably make a cut in like 6 years too, Bernhard. Just a robot.
That's somebody asked me a question. It might have been you. Like, what would Bernhard be if he was playing on the PGA Tour week in, week out?
I did ask you that, actually.
Like, where do you...
There's my question of the week.
Yeah, I don't... I've thought about it. It's like, you have to think he'd finish a top 100.
I would say yes to that. He might even win on one of the maybe like Colonial or something. I could see him winning, or Harbortown. You know, probably not, but he could.
Yeah. I mean, the guy played in the second to last group at the Masters 2 years ago. So, and
he played decent this year, didn't he? Or was it last year?
I feel like he always plays decent. And, you know, it could be because he's anchoring his putter.
He is also cheating. Yeah, that's true. Cheating helps. Especially golf.
All right. Here's one about, you know, bucket list courses. So outside of Augusta, Pine Valley, and Cypress, what are your top five bucket list courses right now?
That I haven't played.
Yeah. You've played a lot of them.
I have played a lot of them. St. Andrews.
Yeah.
Carnoustie. I haven't played golf over there. I've been over there, but never played golf for some reason. That's kind of a blatant error on my part. So
all of Scotland and England and Ireland.
Yeah, that you can basically end the bucket list there.
Yeah, I have all of those too. I'll do states because it'll be easier.
We should do a fried egg trip.
Yeah, we should. I gotta get married first.
Yeah, do that. Just do it tomorrow, and then we'll do it later.
Yeah, at this point in wedding planning, I would love to just
do it tomorrow.
Yeah, we're just gonna head out of town, elope. I would say National Golf Links, Shinnecock, mm-hmm. Oakmont, and Cypress. I can't pick Pine Valley. I can't pick. I do. I want to see Marion, and what is that, four? And then the last one is, I don't know. I'll do off the radar. I kind of want to see Essex Country Club, Essex County up in Boston. It's just random. But
Marion is for sure on my bucket list. I haven't played there. I'd love to.
Yeah, that one is that one's high. All right, so this is an interesting question. Dane Mitro wants to differentiate PGA and U.S. Open if par. I think this is a direct question to me because of my belief that par is kind of irrelevant.
Right, par is just a number.
Yeah, it's just a number. It doesn't really matter. But you know, it's this made up number that holds like some intention. So if par slash close to par slash extreme difficulty isn't a primary focus, Kepka in Arizona shot 15 under when he won, and at Aaron Hills he shot 18 under. So, you know, what is the difference? And so I think the way I look at this is I look at what Aaron Hills did, and it separated the players playing very, very good and the players not playing well. Because you saw people like McIlroy, Dustin Johnson, they were shooting over par and shooting 75s because they weren't playing well. But right. Guys that were playing well, you know, played well because they hit the ball well, they hit it in the fairway. The fairways were wider, which I think allowed for a lot more players to have a chance in a U.S. Open. I think one of the mistakes that we see with golf, and it, everybody, it's like, what is driving carries such a heavy weight in your typical U.S. Open setup. And I think, so you've got narrow fairways and thick rough usually. So a long hitter, and you'll see it this week at Quail Hollow, a long hitter is going to miss fairways, and a short hitter, because of narrow fairways, is going to miss fairways, even if you're right. Driving it great. But that short hitter, when he misses fairways, is like trying to hit a 5-iron out of thick rough.
Yeah, no chance.
Versus a long hitter like Dustin Johnson, we saw at Oakmont, is hitting 9-irons and 8-irons. And like, you have a chance to hit those shots out of thick rough. You have zero chance to hit a 5-iron. So, I don't know. I think an interesting thing with major setups is like they drastically favor the skill of distance and with strong driving ability. Like, accuracy is important, but the accurate short hitter on a U.S. Open rarely wins.
Right.
It's usually the accurate long hitter.
Yeah, I think I just think people don't like change, and they didn't. You know, you don't see the guys gouging balls from the rough up to their knees, and the grass flying around like cabbage, and all that. I mean, that which I enjoy watching that style of golf, but I watched. I think, you know, start to finish Erin Hills, and I thought it was a great golf course. And basically the moral of the story to me was anybody that had a two-way miss going that week was completely screwed, had no chance out there. And the guys that were able to control their misses and know where they were going to miss it, they were fine.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I think it allowed for more recovery shots around the greens than your traditional one. That's how, like, Patrick Reed was relevant. You know,
that was an insane round, yeah.
I mean, he missed, I think, nine greens and shot 63, which is, I mean, when he hit the green, he made birdie. And when he missed, he got up and down every time, which, I mean, that's...
He had a couple chip-ins, too, I think.
Yeah, he did. I mean,
If you miss nine greens at Oakmont, I mean, you struggle to break it. You really struggle to break 80, I feel like. I mean, it's a completely different animal.
Yeah, it's different, and I think that's the big thing is people don't like different, especially right. Especially seeing a long-standing record smashed, you know, right. Or tied is you know, and like it was close, you know, it wasn't just one guy, just because that's like when Tiger did it at Pebble, everybody else was around par, and when Rory did it at Congressional. What do you win by 9?
Yep.
So you know, it was the fact that I think there was, you know, all these guys shooting low scores that drove people crazy.
What do you think 01 Tiger shoots at Erin Hills this year? I mean, it couldn't be that much better than 18, could it?
I always struggle with this question because the technologies change right. So much.
22 maybe?
Yeah, I think he was so good. I mean,
are the players now better, I guess, than the players he faced?
They're better than the players he faced.
Right, I would say so too.
But has technology allowed more players to be really good?
Yes, absolutely.
So you've got, it's not all the players now, but... It's a technology. Like, one of the things I always go back to is like the hybrid and how easy it's made, like, hitting long. Like, when you used to have to hit a 3-iron, golf was extremely way, way harder than it is now with driving irons and hybrids, you know.
Right. Like one irons?
Yeah. One irons and, you know, non-pro V1 balls were. It's just a different game.
I'd love to see the Pro Tracer on the range at like the 97 U.S. Open. Be like watching the soccer team take corner kicks. You know, the guys working draws, fades everywhere versus today where it's like they're just shooting out of a gun dead straight.
Well, yeah. I mean, when the ball spun, I mean, that was one of the things that Tiger was so great at. And he said in his book is like with Hank Haney working on all 9 shots.
Right.
I don't think you need to have all 9 shots anymore.
No, it's funny. When I remember when I was probably 15 or 16, the guy I was working with at the time told me the best way to practice was hit a draw, hit a fade, hit it high, hit it low, you know, one after the other. And now it's like you just hit the ball at the flag or wherever you're aiming because it just goes straight, right?
Yeah, it's like, I don't know. There's a whole nother can of worms.
Yeah, it is.
So, Michael, how do you get from a 7 down to a 2 handicap?
The easiest way to do that for sure is inside of 60 yards, I would say.
Yeah, I think so too. It's all short game and wedges. So what if you go up, you hear every like college player when they get to the web tour, they say, the thing I didn't realize was how good these guys are inside 120 yards. And I thought I was really good. And this is, you know, I remember listening to Ollie. Ali Schneider Dance talk about it on No Laying Up's podcast. You know, and this is the number one ranked amateur in the world, and he's saying this. So I think a lot of it also has to do with, like, how much time those guys practice. But it's like right. everything. I mean, you're a better amateur player than me, and I always look when we play and I say, he's way better than me at wedges and inside 120 yards.
I mean, I think it's no matter who you are, I feel like you could always answer that question. Say, I mean, whether you're a plus four, plus two, six, 10, 12, 15 handicap, how do you get three shots easier really quickly and with, you know, without too much, you know, mechanical altering, is just get better with your wedges. I mean, I think Stricker's about the only person that is as good as, you know, he probably can be, because he's almost damn near perfect with his wedges. You know, maybe Zach Johnson or somebody, but anybody, even a struggling tour player, can say, okay, I can get three shots better at tournament if I just get dial in my wedges a little more.
I think, like, that's one of the things that gets overlooked with, like, strokes gained is, you know, like, if you hit a 350-yard drive on tour, you gain, like, right down the middle of the fairway, you gain, like, 0.1 strokes on the field. Like, 0.1 of a shot. But if you make, like, a 25-footer, you gain, like, 0.5 shots. I don't know the exact numbers, and some stats right. guy is probably going to come at me because of it. But the same goes for hitting a 120-yard wedge to 2 feet, you know, where you're not going to miss. Is you're going to pick up at least, like, a quarter, a half shot.
Right.
So it's the inside, the closer you get to the hole, the better you are, the more strokes you gain.
Yeah, I mean, it's especially with the harder golf courses you play, or the more under the gun you feel, to be able to dial in your wedges is a huge advantage. Like, if you're going to play a short golf course, I don't know, some of the courses we play tournaments at where they're like 6,600, it's really not that important. It sounds like it would be. But you're not going to miss many greens. You're not going to get out of position too much. You're probably going to hit it to 20 feet all day, 15 feet. But if you play, you know, a very difficult golf course, you know, a major caliber golf course, I mean, no matter who you are, you're going to miss greens. You're always going to be out of position. You're always going to have to try to get it up and down. And so is everybody. I mean, maybe three people playing in the event might not. There might be flushing it that so good you can't believe. But no matter what, I mean, the harder and longer the golf course is, the better your wedges need to be. And I feel like that's a huge misnomer by people.
Yeah, it's like if you get in trouble, being able to chip out and like being able to get up and down. I mean, like
right.
those when you if you're in the trees and you chip out and you make par because you hit a wedge to 8 feet and make the putt, like you like walk off the tee, you feel like it's a birdie.
Right.
That's what Jordan Spieth does so well, too.
Oh, he does. I mean, he did it to... That was basically the turning point of the Open, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's... It's like... That is, like, what... Why he's so great. Is
right.
that... He just... He's so good inside... He's so good just inside 150. So... all right. Peter McAlpine. What should he have for breakfast?
I think Peter should have some Boston cream pies, six of them. They're good for your heart, good start to the day. Yeah, just get a good, healthy start. You'll digest them by lunch. You'll be able to go to McDonald's
just
for lunch.
Just a true American breakfast.
Yeah, we're almost a country at war. You got to support the country.
I have to say, you have to eat a fried egg.
Yeah, that was too easy.
I eat a lot of fried eggs for breakfast, you know. I'm a big
I'm a huge fan of fried eggs.
Like, a fried egg sandwich is so good.
You get on a croissant? Are you kidding me?
And then the yolk breaks when you cut into it.
Yeah, I'm getting a semi right now.
Yeah.
That sounds delicious. I might have to have one for dinner.
I just had some scrambled eggs for dinner because I'm a bum. And my fiance,
she out of town or what?
She was going to something, so I just was too lazy to do anything else. So, eggs. All right, we're gonna get to some overrated, underrated here. Lincoln Duff This is very timely. The clips.
I'm going to say overrated. I think the Sun in general is overrated. I think Elon Musk is probably developing another Sun right now as we speak. So I'd say I'd give it another 6 months to a year till we are done with the Sun.
I'm going to say the Eclipse is, I think it's overrated because I feel like every year it's like we have one thing that they're like, oh, this isn't going to happen for like another 250 years or this isn't going to happen for like another 50 years. Like my mom,
that's so true,
always is telling me like some random thing with the moon or the sun isn't going to happen for another 50 years. But it's like there's one of these every year. So really, it happens every year.
I'm definitely not. I mean, if I remember, and I'm sure I will because of Twitter, but I'll probably check it out. But I never am one to like go outside to see, you know, Saturn. It looks like a fucking light in the, you know, a million miles away. You know, it's like I have not much interest in that. I'm not a big astrology guy.
Yeah, I think astrology is like palm reading. You mean astronomy?
Astronomy. I'm not a big astronomy guy. I am, however, a big astrology guy. Scorpio, for those of you wondering.
Do you have a regular psychic?
I do. It's actually included in my health insurance, so it's nice.
Really?
Yeah.
That's kind of amazing. I bet a psychic could help golf games. That might be another way to get from a 7 down to a 2.
Go see a psychic?
Yeah.
I think the really good ones, from what I've heard, are kind of in like the back alleys of New Orleans. Like if you go to one of those, pay cash, give them your social security number, I think that's probably a good start.
All right. We're going to get back on golf here. Next overrated, underrated, David Hazen, Cameron McCormick.
You probably know a lot. I know he teaches Zalatoris and Connolly, who's, they're both unbelievable, obviously. Connolly just made a big splash at the Open. I would say underrated, because I honestly don't know that much about him.
Yeah, I think he's underrated. I think he's like a modern, a soon-to-be modern-day Hank Haney, David Ledbetter. He's got Spieth, which obviously helps. You could throw Butch Harmon in there too,
right.
But he's got Spieth, he's got these boyhood sensations. He's just got all these boyhood sensations. Like Spieth, Spieth was, you know, we've been seeing him on TV since 15 or 16, and then you've got Conley, who he looked like he was 12, but he was what, 20, and he's playing professionally on the Challenge Tour. And then you've got Zalatoris, who won the U.S. Junior, and he'll probably be on the Walker Cup team. And I how could he be overrated? Is my question.
I saw Conley at the Azalea a couple years ago during one of the practice rounds, and him and his Canada's coach or whatever had one of those electronic levels on the putting greens, and it just made me realize I had no chance that week, because I was like, these guys know every little detail, and I'm more worried about where I'm eating dinner that night. It's kind of funny. I'm sad.
Yeah, it's interesting how the when these college kids, like, it's just like it's such a different game now, because of like the Strakaline, the reading books, TrackMan, like I didn't used to know like if I was optimizing my launch angle.
Yeah, no clue.
Yeah, you know what I think teachers should have to do too? All we ever hear about with teachers is like their success stories. I want to hear I want to hear about their bad students, like. Who went to them and just bombed out?
Was a good player, and then they just completely massacred their game.
Yeah, like
you should definitely do an article on that.
I mean, like, there's one guy who's massacred backs. But you know, like, I hear Charlie Wee is doing wonders with KJ Choi's game. I want to know more about Charlie Wee's teaching abilities.
Yeah, I do too, actually.
Does he prescribe... Like, is he a stack and tilt guy still?
That kind of went by the wayside quickly.
Yeah, I think technology might have ruined stack and tilt.
Yeah, you know what's funny is we were kind of talking about this on our text thread the other day about how funny it is that, like, the golf swing evolves so drastically in, like, 10 years. But with technology, have we finally gotten to a point with TrackMan and everything that it won't change that much in the next 20 years? Because, mm-hmm. I mean, the difference is, I think the way I described it was, like, you know, 20 years ago to now, I mean, another 20 years, you could be pointing your toes at the target at address. You know, it's that much of a crazy difference in a lot of the different swings taught. I'm curious if technology has put a kind of put a damper or halt, slow down at least on the changing of the golf swing.
It's like it led to like a rapid change, but now I think like where it changes is like now it's going to be all of this training that you do to like further and further optimize and the physio stuff like
TPI and all that.
Like I, you know, like this the Western Am. I'm walking through the lobby at Skokie Country Club, and some like 17-year-old is talking to the physio guy they had there, like the massage guy, the stretcher, and he's like, "Yeah, my certain flexor muscle just feels a little tight, a little tender. I need it worked out." And the physio guy goes like, "Have you ever had this kind of like, you know, thing done?" And I'm like, I felt like they were speaking another language.
Got to activate the glutes.
Yeah. Who knew Tiger was ahead of his time when he said that?
We kind of grew up playing golf at a time where it started to become working out was kind of a thing. I don't know what year exactly, but at some point when, you know, I'd say when I was 15 to 25, somewhere in there, it became a workout sport, you know?
15 to 25, quite an accurate.
So basically at half my life.
It's, it had to be Tiger, because...
I think it was Tiger, yeah.
It was, you know, like the long hitter before Tiger was John Daly, and I don't think he was working out.
Right.
It's,
I'll never forget that PGA Tour commercial where Tim Herron is sitting out eating a hot dog outside the exercise room watching Jesper Parnevik ride the stationary bike.
Tim.
There's not many lumpies anymore. There needs to be some.
I know. You had Herron. You had Craig Stadler. The Walrus.
What happened to Kevin Stadler? He got hurt, I think? Or
yeah, I saw the other day that he was like starting his comeback, but like I feel like he's been gone for 5 years.
Yeah, 5 years sounds low.
Like, I guess, like, Shane Lowry's a bigger guy now.
Feisty Irishman.
Yeah, but, like, the lack of big guys is kind of alarming.
Like, yeah, I'm trying to rack my brain. They're all the same build, you know?
John Rahm is bigger, but it's not like he's, like, he's not Craig Stadler.
No, I don't even know if that's fat.
No.
It's more of like just big boned.
He's just big.
Yeah, he's a big. He could play linebacker.
Honestly, like I've just got through the top 20, and Rahm and Hoffman are the biggest guys.
That's really funny. So, yeah.
Patrick Reed.
Out.
Patrick Reed?
He's like, a little chunky.
He's like doughy. He's not fat, you know?
Right. He's kind of got my build.
Yeah.
It's a little doughy.
I'm doughy, too. I sit at a computer all day.
It's ditto.
It does
wonders.
Duffner's a bigger guy, but not, like, he's not Stadler.
Duffner's like the new Duvall, just completely fluctuating his weight. You never know whether you're going to get skinny or pudgy Duff.
Yeah. It seems like pudgy Duff might be a little bit better at golf.
Yeah, pudgy Duff is for sure better at golf, I think.
It's, Yeah, there's nobody. There's, like, no one in the top 50 that you would say is like, Craig Stadler at all.
So there you go. It's done with.
It's gone.
Physio.
Maybe this is a... You know what? A topic came up on another pod about having like a stock market for players in the world rankings and being able to bet on a stock market. Like, I think this guy who's ranked 100th is going to go up.
That would be really cool. I like that idea.
And being able to short a guy rather than a bet event to event, being able to, like, you know, essentially bet on their success over the next year and a half. And then and then knowing when to sell them.
Yeah, I like that idea a lot.
I think it needs to happen. We just probably need a really big bank roll.
I feel like somebody tried to start a sports futures exchange a few years ago. It might be like 5 years ago. Kind of like the futures market in bonds or equities or whatever. But I think it fizzled pretty quickly.
What top 10 player would you short? You got DJ, Spieth, Matsuyama, Rory, Sergio, Rahm, Day, Stenson, Norin, or Fowler. I think there might be one that sticks out.
Stenson?
I was going to say it's going to be one of the Swedes.
Yeah, Stenson or Norin. Norin, you know, he's apparently really polarizing on Twitter. People love talking about, you know, whether he deserves to be ranked that high or not. But, I mean, he's pretty solid. Stenson's kind of at the end of his career. But, I mean, I feel like if it were a stock market, those guys would not be in the top 10. You know what I mean? They wouldn't be the 10 highest prices.
I guess that's true, because then you could buy somebody. It would be, maybe you'd have to be the bank. Like, you'd have to bet against a bank, because when they go up, like, I owe them, but they have to sell, you know?
I'm going all in on Xander Schauffele stock.
Who would I be buying? Xander's kind of, he's kind of got some big nuts, you know? Like, he wasn't really, like, a high-profile guy, because he didn't, like, kill it on the web tour or the web finals, but I don't know who I'd be buying.
Your boy Trey Mullinex?
I like Trey. He might not get to keep his card, so that have to be a long-term buy. Yeah, it's I mean, I'm actually fascinated by this idea. I'd probably buy I like Daniel Berger.
That's a good one.
I kind of think I feel like he's got like that irrational sense of confidence.
Yep.
He's like, you know, like that, like the great basketball players, like the great bat scorers in basketball have, like where they just shoot at will because they.
Right.
I think Berger is a guy that's just going to win a lot of tournaments.
I would bet that Berger wins a major for sure at some point.
He could win this week.
He could, absolutely. I think he's on my DraftKings team, actually. I hope he wins.
Paulie was talking about this grass that they have that certain people play really well on, and one of the spots is TPC Southwind in Memphis, where Berger's won the last 2 years.
Yeah.
So, all right, last overrated, underrated, and it's from the angry golfer in Glenview. Ladies' Day.
I would say Ladies' Day is very underrated. I'm a huge fan of Ladies' Day. It's usually at some obscure time, you know, Tuesday or Thursday morning from 8:15 to 8:45 in the morning. I'm probably not playing golf those days anyway. And when I go to the course that afternoon for my Scotch game, the pins are easy. It's birdie pins. You know you're going to get some action in Scotch. And it'll just be a blast. So I Ladies' Day, they should do it every day.
You know, another underrated aspect of it is that if you go there in the morning and you forget it's Ladies' Day, I forget a lot of times about, you know, things. If you go on Ladies' Day's morning, it is, you know, you have to practice. Like, and I should practice more.
That's a very, very good point.
Like, it forces you to practice.
Yeah, you're like, oh, God, now I got to go putt for like an hour and a half.
Yeah. So I'm all in on Ladies' Day. They could make, you know, and you wouldn't get mad. You wouldn't play and get frustrated.
Yeah, I'm actually, now I'm so convinced they should just ban men.
I am all in for the first, or if it exists, somebody let me know, ladies-only golf course.
That is interesting. I wonder if that exists.
Like, there's
got to be one somewhere.
Tom Doak.
Scotland or England or something.
Tom Doak brought it up when I had him on the pod, is that he'd love to see a ladies-only a course designed for women. And I'm all in on that.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. I think that's a great idea.
I'd love to play it, too, because it would expose how bad I am.
Sometimes for fun, I play the ladies. I mean, I have a couple times this year played the ladies' teams with my fiance just because, I mean, it's fun. You know why? I mean, I'm not just the two of us are going out playing. I don't need to beat myself up and, you know, grind five irons from the tips.
Yeah, when I worked at a golf course, I would regularly play 9 or even 18 holes from the ladies' tees to see how low I could shoot.
Yeah, and it's also a confidence builder. You make 9 birdies or 7 birdies or whatever. I mean, you feel like, oh, okay, I remember how to make a birdie.
And it goes back to this whole thing of you're going to practice a lot of wedge shots and a lot of different little short shots. I'm going to go play the ladies' tees one of these days.
You definitely should. You get so many awkward shots where you don't even like think about like weird 50-yard open face shots over bunker. You know, you get some really, really weird shots that you actually come to realize you're better off being like 130 in the middle of the fairway than where you just, you know, drove it on the 290-yard par 4, you know, pin high left, dead. Yeah. It's kind of funny. It's funny to realize that stuff.
I playing the ladies' tees, maybe even playing in ladies' day as a man. Might be my new thing.
I don't blame you.
All right. On that note, I I don't think
so
I
you're,
could.
You're going the other way.
No, I don't think I'm gonna play the ladies' day, but I'm gonna play the ladies' tees in the next probably 2 months.
Nice, I like it.
All right. Well, we're done with this. You know, we might do this more often. Let us know if you like it.
Yeah, mailbags are fun.
Yeah. Hey, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for having me.